I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode is brought to you by Pico Oysters, turning water into brine on Long Island's North Fork. This week on Meat and Three, we're looking at factors that will shape our food world in 2019. We start with trend predictions and how media covers them.
A website could theoretically devote all their coverage to these viral trends and get all sorts of hits. That's not a way to build sustainable readerships, just as it's not a way to build, you know, sustainable restaurants.
We report on a big change coming and how street meat will be served.
On January 1st, a ban on plastic foam went into effect in New York City.
And we round out the episode with a story about using gene editing to create the spicy tomato of the future.
At first, it sounds like a gimmick or like something that you would do for fun. The truth is, there is a real value behind it.
It's not too late to make your resolution. Subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single episode this year.
Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Elena Santigade. This week, I'm very excited to be kicking off a new series within our show, Cheesemaking Elements. Now, while we're always talking about cheesemaking on some level here at Cutting the Curd, we're excited to go deeper on specific aspects of the cheesemaking process throughout the upcoming year. We'll be talking with experts on every step in the process, and I know I'm excited about learning more as we dig into the foundations of cheesemaking, the steps that all together make for this product that we just absolutely love, right? So, what's our first Cheesemaking Elements episode focus? Milk, of course, and sheep's milk at that. My guest today is Mariana Marquez de Almeida. Mariana, how did I do saying the name?
Great.
Mariana is
Thank
you. She is a sheep and goat specialist focused on everything from milk production to cheese making. On today's show, we'll talk about what's unique and different about sheep's milk, what sets the ruminant apart, and how Mariana's current work with genetics may pave the way for a farmstead sheep milk cheese making renaissance here in the U.S. So, Mariana is currently the senior animal scientist, breeding advisor, and cheese specialist at Miss J and Company, an organization working to bring the Asaf sheep breed to North America. Did I say the name of the breed right, Mariana?
Yes.
Today it's like,
you are doing perfect.
I'm like second guessing my pronunciation, but Asaf, listeners, we'll put it in the show notes, but it's A-S-S-A-F. So, Mariana, welcome to Cutting the Curd. I am so excited to sort of have your sheep milk knowledge shared with the radio listeners out there. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Thank you for your invitation. It's a pretty good honor to be here sharing this with you.
So, as we dive in here and get into the specifics of sheep's milk, I wanted to frame this a bit for our listeners. And it, you know, it's so interesting. Mariana has helped me gather some data here, and while it's not perfect, we do have. So we do have one number that's going to help us understand sheep milk cheese production here in the U.S. This is from a webinar by Professor David Thomas, who's a professor of sheep management and genetics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So in 2017, he cites an estimate that the U.S. produces 1.9 million pounds of sheep milk cheese per year. And listeners, so 1.9 million pounds of sheep's milk cheese per year, the imported number, the number of pounds of imported sheep's milk, 74 million. 74 million pounds. And that's about 2.5%, a little less than 2.5% of total sheep's milk cheese, I guess, sales or technically, it's not actually a sales number, but in terms of imports, that's the ratio. So, yeah. Wow, we have a very small part of the market here in the U.S., and it seems like there's room to grow here for sheep's milk cheese making. So, Mariana, let's talk about the milk itself. Now that we have that sort of that frame in our minds, from your perspective, can you tell us a little bit about how sheep's milk is different from cow's milk? What sets it apart?
Sure. Sheep's milk is basically and mainly more concentrated, more rich than cow's milk. It has twice the fat and the protein content. And it also has like a lot of more casein to make cheese.
The casein is a protein component. Is casein a type of protein?
Yes. Protein is composed by the serum, lactoserum proteins, and then the casein. And the casein is what it's going to make the milk coagulate and transform it into cheese. So that's the most, there are several caseins in the milk, and mm-hmm. that's also a difference between sheep and goat and cow. Uh-huh. They always have different components regarding to casein.
Oh, interesting. So different types of casein.
Yes, there yeah. are.
I feel there like are. Sheep's milk has this reputation of just being richer, you know, like sort of having more fat or more, you know, everybody points out on a manchego how it starts to sweat. But it's actually, what you're saying is that there's more of everything, basically.
Yes, there is more of everything. Yes. And it's true. It's true. So this will make that there's also not only about quantity, but also about quality on everything. The fatty acids are different. The caseins, the composition of the caseins that we were talking before, it's also different.
Uh-huh. And what does that mean for the final texture? So when I think about texture of a cheese and cheese making, I'm thinking a lot about the protein. And so what does that sort of different quality of casein mean for the texture of a sheep's milk cheese?
For example, I can give you an example. In cow's milk, there's much more alpha casein. Mm-hmm. than in sheep's milk. And alpha casein is very important to keep the curds together. So it gives more stability, so you can stretch it better than in sheep cheeses or sheep curds. But in the final product, the sheep milk is more dry, tends to be drier, less... It's a little bit more crumbly,
not so elastic.
Thank you. Sometimes I lose myself in the translations.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, the being able to talk about this at all is one thing. Being able to talk about this in two different languages is a whole other world.
Oh my God! No. Thank you.
No, it's very impressive.
And also the not only the proteins, Elena, but also the composition on fatty acids, it's different.
Right, and doesn't that have to do with like, aren't certain types of fatty acids like quote unquote healthier or better for you than others? Is that true?
Yes, there are. Normally short chain fatty acids are associated with healthier foods. It's a trend, not all. It's a long story, but it is.
Right, and so the simpler. sheep's milk has more short chain fatty acids. That's
yes,
the type.
Yes, and sheep and goat more than cow. Yes,
very interesting.
But then. At the final product, everything gets transformed.
Right. I mean, we're talking about the raw, fresh milk, unadulterated. Yeah. When we start talking about cheese making, it's like there's so many elements in the process between the original product of the milk and the final product of the cheese, right?
There are.
So can you tell me about a little, like some of the differences in a cheesemaker might see or utilize in terms of working with cheese, with sheep's milk?
There are a lot. And the simple fact that it's richer milk in calcium, you don't have the need to add calcium to the milk to make cheese, or it having more casein and more protein, it's more sensitive to rennet. I think the most fun factor while making sheep milk cheese in the vat is that it's the behavior of the curd and the coagulation is totally different.
How so?
It coagulates faster than cow, and the curd is very strong. You know, if you have to cut it in a point, or it gets very, very hard to cut.
Interesting. So
and a lot of times, because it has so much more protein, so it's probably going to be faster.
Right. And to me, it seems like, I think of protein, again, it's like, I think of it as the texture of the final cheese, or sort of like the structure during cheese making. And so it would make sense if there's more of it, that the structure would kind of be stronger. And that's so interesting that you mention about the higher calcium content, because that's it. Now, don't, in cheesemaking, which, like, I'm by no means a cheesemaker, but I've done a lot of home cheesemaking, and wrote a little book that's secretly trying to convince people to just buy cheese and not really make their own. But it will help you make your own. But anyways, in my book, and I've read also that in cheese making, sometimes calcium chloride is added to strengthen the curd.
Yeah.
And with sheep's milk, basically you wouldn't, so mostly that's done with cow's milk, but it's neat to think of like the fact that all of the structure means that you wouldn't have to add that to your process.
No, you don't. Yeah, it's one less ingredient.
Right. And also you run the risk, I think, with calcium chloride of bitterness if you're adding too much, right? So you can kind of avoid that.
Yeah, it depends.
It depends, yeah.
That's the thing in cheese making, is everything depends on what are you doing, how are you doing,
right,
what kind of cheese are you doing.
Everything is like in a relationship with everything else. Right.
Exactly. That's the fun part.
Totally.
You have to be thinking about everything.
And it's interesting, you know, like your perspective I find really interesting, because you are a scientist, but you're also a cheesemaker, which is really unique, because you're understanding sort of like this basic level, right, of the science and this intricate background to everything that's happening, but you also understand that sense of like nuanced relationship in how each step of the process really builds on the other.
Oh yes, a little bit. And I have, I do a little bit. I don't go deep into a lot of the cow milk cheeses, because I never worked with them a lot. But as far as what I have done, it's because it is related. If you start with a great quality milk, you can end up with a great quality cheese if you do things well.
Right.
The other way around, it's not totally true. So it helps a lot when you are making cheese and you have a problem to go back to the farm and be able to figure out the problem. So I love that.
It's almost like solving mysteries, you know, like really tracing back every element. So what about going back to sort of the differences and the unique aspects of sheep's milk, what about yield? Because one of the things I always think about is like you're starting, I'm curious about production and yield. So how much milk is a sheep producing versus a cow? And then what percentage yield are you able to get for cheesemaking in general?
Well, as far as an animal perspective, it's, sheep produces much less than a cow, but it really depends on the breed we are talking about. But we can say that sheep produces like 10 times less than a cow. But then as far as the milk and what we were talking about, milk yield and cheese yield, when you are going to make sheep milk cheeses, prepare more molds because you're going to have a much higher yield. So it's more or less it's 18% yield compared to cow's milk, which is in average a 10%. Hmm. Of course, again, this all depends on the type of cheese you're making.
Right.
But as an average, we can say that we have 8% more cheese in when you do 1 pound of sheep milk compared to cow milk.
It's pretty incredible because when you think about the animals themselves, it's like cows are obviously larger than sheep, but they're not 10 times larger, you know? Like, so it's kind of wild that cows produce so much milk, but then sheep have this sort of secret treasure of their milk, which is that you get more from it.
Yes.
Very interesting. And
about cheese, and when we arrive to the final product, the cheese is different. Mm-hmm. The sheep milk has such a wonderful different flavor. Mm-hmm.
What are your words that you use to describe sheep's milk cheese? Like, what are just some go-to words that you feel like always come to mind when you're tasting a sheep's milk cheese?
I think normally you can, it depends on everything. I'm so sorry, but it all depends
on the actual cheese.
But when I think about cheese, I always refer to cheese in Portugal and in Spain, which is where I come from.
Mm-hmm. Your home cheese.
My home cheese, yes. And always aged cheese. So I always think back on a nutty, sweet, nutty feeling that the aged sheep milk cheeses have. Mm-hmm. And they have
that roasty, that sort of caramelized note to them.
Yes. Yes, and it's really, really good, especially when it's natural, when you don't have a lot of cultures and adjuncts, and it just let the cheese age.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Totally.
It's delicious.
It totally is delicious, and I feel really bummed out that I didn't bring a piece of sheep's milk cheese with me to the studio today to be nibbling on during this conversation.
Oh my God.
Huge mistake. Huge mistake.
Huge mistake.
Ay, ay, ay. So it's interesting on this idea that the sheep, and this idea of sheep's milk production. Mm-hmm. I'm also assuming, like, if the sheep, do the sheep have a shorter lactation period as well?
Yes, they do.
Got it.
Especially here in the U.S., that the sheep don't produce that much. So the normal lactation will be like 5-6 months. Mm-hmm. So, and mainly they are seasonable animals. Mm-hmm. So they mainly produce as traditional, and I'm talking about here in the U.S.,
right.
They only produce from spring, fall, and until the beginning of the end of the summer. So it's like a 6 month lactation, more or less.
And when you say, you're mentioning here in the U.S., is it, and Will, I'm excited to talk more about the Asaf breed and sort of what you're doing there. But even before we get there, is it sort of generally the case that overseas, that in Europe, in Portugal and Spain and around Europe, that sheep's milk cheeses are being produced more year-round and less seasonally. Is that true?
It is true, but there's always, but not totally
right, not 100%,
true.
But yeah.
No, because there are some cheeses that are made still seasonally.
Right.
Especially the PDO cheeses.
Right.
In Spain, the Idiazabal, for example, it's a good example. It's made only, like here, seasonably.
Idiazabal is one of my favorite cheeses.
Yeah, it's raw, it's delicious. And it's also made with a specific breed. That's one of the reasons. But mainly in Spain, and generalizing it as if we can, we do make cheese year-round. Right. And we do produce milk year-round. Hmm. Doesn't happen a lot here. I think there's just only one farm that does that here that I know. Mm-hmm. I don't know everything, but I do know that farm.
I would trust trust your knowledge on this topic.
Well, I don't know. Maybe somebody knows more, and I doubt it. But anyway, and we are also going to produce year round, but that's for later.
Yeah, and so that's a result of the specific breed more than anything else, or also sort of just traditional approach. Would you
it's
say
it's just a traditional approach?
Okay.
I think.
Yeah,
it requires some tricks, some playing with the animals, but it's very natural. We can very naturally do it.
Right. Right. Very interesting. Okay. Well, now that we've sort of floated that little teaser about the Asaf breed and everything we're going to speak about soon, we're actually going to jump out for a quick break. Listeners, we'll be back in just a moment with more of our Sheep's Milk Deep Dive.
This episode is brought to you by Pico Oysters, turning water into brine on Long Island's North Fork. Grown out of Little Peconic Bay, Pico Oysters are the only oysters based out of New Suffolk, New York. Owner, farmer, and avid fisherman Peter Stein founded Pico Oysters in 2016 after leaving a corporate job in business consulting and educational software. It's his love and passion for the area and his farm that makes eating and learning about Picos so enjoyable. Taste one and see for yourself. Learn more at PicoOysters.com. That's P-E-E-K-O Oysters.com. You can rewind, erase, forget my
face. And the song that's hidden, something remains. Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm Elena Santigade, and I'm here with sheep and goat milk specialist Mariana Marquez de Almeida. And we are talking about all things sheep milk and sheep as animals. I feel like I'm learning so much on this episode, Mariana.
Oh, thank you.
It's great. It's like, I mean, I think that a lot of cheese people in the U.S. are exposed to a decent amount of sheep's milk cheese. And, you know, you'll see a sheep, you know, a flock of sheep every now and then if you're out visiting farms or driving through farmland in the U.S. But it's really rare to really get into the specifics. So this is very fun. And now I think we should jump into the world beyond the sheep as we know them here in the U.S. And I mentioned at the top of the show that Mariana is working with a small team at Miss J and Company on bringing in genetics for the Asaf sheep breed to the United States. And this is a process that sounds pretty wild. It's not as easy as just bringing an animal over in the cargo hold.
We wish.
Yeah, you wish. Life would be, you'd be well on your way cheese making right now. If that was the case, right?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about, why don't we start with the breed and some of the differences between, you know, sheep's milk production as we know it here in the U.S. and what the Asaf breed can and will do to disrupt that world a little bit. And then we can talk about how you're actually making it happen.
Okay. So here in the U.S., we have a very, very, very small industry, dairy sheep industry. And most of the, as we talked before, most of the dairies are seasonable. So you produce milk 6-7 months, and then you are 5-6 other months without producing. So which is...
It's a hard business model.
The hard business, yeah. But also the animals don't... As an average, and we are all talking about average,
right.
The animals here produce like 800 pounds per lactation, which is very, very small.
Right. So that's here in the U.S., 800 pounds per animal during the lactation season.
Yes.
Okay.
And what we are doing, bringing the Asaf breed, is that those animals have been developed in Spain. Asaf comes from Israel, and then it was imported to Spain in the 70s, and they have made a very good job in improving the breed. Mm. And right now, their average production is around the 1,500 to 1,600
pounds. Wow, so it's basically lactation. Double. It's basically double the production of the sheep that yes. are here. Wow. Yes.
And there are animals that you can reach 2,000 pounds very easily. But we are focused, when we talk about breeds and milk production, we need to focus on averages.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah.
Wow, so that's a huge, that's a huge difference. And also, the other piece of this that we are not getting into too much today, but the economics of sheep's milk production in the U.S. and sheep's milk cheese making has been really challenging. So I would imagine, we've had some, a few cheesemakers who made sheep's milk cheeses close down in the last couple of years. And mm-hmm. I feel like with this, double the production, that would certainly help.
Right. Yes, but there is, it's in the U.S. it's a challenge because of the breed. Mm-hmm. Because of the production, but there needs to be, and if you also increase the production of one animal, you can make the animal go longer on the lactation too. Mm. If you want to do only one lactation, it's not our case, but and there's also a lot of management that needs to be learned how mm-hmm. to help the animals produce more.
Right. Very interesting. So tell us a little bit about how you're developing this breed. If you're not allowed to bring the actual animals over, I believe through the U.S. Customs, you can bring in like semen, and that's how a lot of like genetics with cow production happens too, I think, right?
Yes.
And then what do you do? How does it work? What do you, you don't need to explain to me the birds and the bees. I do know how that works.
No, but just to go back, I'm going to go back just one
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah.
In 2014, the U.S. borders opened finally to the imports of genetics from Europe, from sheep and goat from Europe.
Mm. So previous to 2014, not allowed at all. Nothing is coming in.
No, the borders closed in, I think it was 94 or 96.
Okay.
I'm not sure, mm-hmm. but it was around the time because of the mad cow disease, and the sheep mm-hmm. had a similar disease called scrapie, but okay. from then all the countries have been going against it and controlling the disease. So mm-hmm. finally, they opened the borders in 2014, and when we find out, and we is Shirley Knox, Jeff Weidman, and myself.
You are Miss J and Company, the three of you.
Yes, the three of us decided to start the company, mm-hmm. and it took us after that. It took us 1.5 years to be actually able to bring the semen in.
Wow!
And that's the only thing you can bring. You cannot bring at this moment. You cannot bring embryos or live animals. Only
okay.
semen.
Okay. And so from there, you have to start the breeding process.
Yes.
But
from there, we have to start with the sheep and the ewes that are here.
Right.
And then inseminate them, mm-hmm. and then build the breed like that. Like
right.
It's the technical term is absorbing the breed.
And how many generations of building it do you? Because you're aiming for essentially a pure breed. Is that right?
Yes.
And
that's
so
our main aim.
That's amazing. Yeah. So how many generations do you have to go through? How many rounds of that absorption until you get to that status?
So we in the females, we will do four generations when we are around. After the fourth generation, you have like 93%. The offspring will have 90% Asaf blood. Uh-huh. So we will consider that a pure breed. Otherwise, you never arrive to 100%.
Right.
So we think that 90% is going to be good. But for the males, we'll go one more generation to be considered pure breed, because they are actually the ones that are going to disseminate all the genetic information. So mm-hmm. they have to be one step further.
Got it.
So that, and we will wait for the 97%.
Got it. And after that, your herd has emerged.
Yeah, we hope so.
And so
it will take us 5 years to have the first animals. Well, we have already 1 year now, because we have the first generation already, mm-hmm. and the second generation is going to be born in April. So it will take us 3 more years to have two and a half more years to to build the pure breed.
That's pretty close. I mean, that's not too far off in terms of the grand scheme. I'm sure you wish it was even closer.
Yeah, but if you think about cows, it would take us double the time.
Right.
Yes. So and it's not bad. It is what it is.
You're working with the regulations that you're dealt here in the U.S., I guess.
Yeah.
And are you bringing in new genetics each year? Is that how you're sort of keeping that focus? Okay. Interesting.
Yes. We will. Not every year we brought enough semen. The first time we just didn't want to compromise all our projects. So mm-hmm. if something happens with the borders, if they close for anything, you know, we would not be depending on them. Mm. But then we will, every 2 years, then we will bring more semen in. Yes.
Got it.
Because everything is genetically, everything, if there's an evolution, so we need to keep up with that.
Right. And so now this is sort of a big question, but I'm so curious, how did you originally start working in this realm? What was it that sparked your interest? Was it the science angle? Was it the animal angle? I mean, what brought you to this part of, you know, this professional life originally?
An honest answer?
Yeah.
Craziness.
Insanity.
I'm crazy. No. Shirley, Jeff, and I, we talked for years I was making cheeses in Spain, mm-hmm. goats and sheep. And we talked for years, kind of playing, oh, you have to come here and make these cheeses for us. They are cheese makers. So that will be great. And one day they came to me very serious and said, we want you there. Let's look into it. Mm. And when I came here and see and look for milk and quality milk, there is nothing. There was not even enough milk, even to produce. Produce a decent amount.
And were you surprised by that? Was that different from what you expected?
I was.
You're like, where's all the sheep's milk?
And, you know, you always think, what am I going to do? You know, you from Portugal, from Spain, or from Europe, uh-huh. you always look at the giant Americans as they know it all. Mm. So I was always thinking to myself, what am I doing there? You know, I don't have anything to say. They know it all.
And
it was
really,
it was amazing for me that there was a lot, there was people working in with sheep, and there is knowledge, but that there's not, the resources were not here,
right?
And genetically, and so it was very exciting. That's why I made a decision, because we talked and discussed a lot about this, and we really know that we can make a difference, mm-hmm. not only by bringing the breed, but bringing all the science and the professionality and everything mm-hmm. that is in Spain.
Yeah, so, and you know, when we look, thinking back at those numbers we mentioned right at the top of the show, it's like the fact that 74 million pounds of sheep's milk cheese are coming into this country every year, and only 1.9 million pounds are produced here. There is a market for it, but
there's a huge opportunity.
Right. And if you think about it, it makes sense. If right now U.S. sheep's milk cheesemakers are trying to compete with a breed that is producing half the amount of milk, you know, it's just like, how do you, it's already hard enough for other economic reasons in the US. It's like trying to do that is just so daunting, but double the production and you start to have a different equation there.
We hope so.
Yeah. So you have you have animals now at Miss J and Company. And also, I haven't mentioned where you're calling from. Listeners, Mariana is not calling from balmy Portugal or Spain. tell us where you're calling from, Mariana.
I'm calling from Monroe, Wisconsin. I moved here 3 years ago.
A real dedication to the cause.
In
the midst of this winter.
Don't tell me.
I love Wisconsin as much as the next person, but it must be quite a different climate to get used to there.
Yes, it is.
So,
last week was crazy.
Oh, yeah. This polar vortex. I can't even begin. But, so at your facility at Miss J and Company right now in Monroe, how many animals do you have right now?
So right now we have 300 earlings. We call earlings like they, in a cow world, they are called heifers. They are 1 year old animals.
Ah.
And they will be start lambing in April. Half of them are already have 50% of sow blood, mm-hmm. and half of them are just the breed that it was here before, which is a mixed breed.
Okay. And so you haven't started milking yet. Will be the first, these are the first milkers that you have coming up in April?
Yes. Wow. We are building a whole new facility to hold, in the first phase, 800 sheep. And we are actually still building. Even if it's that cold, we are still building the milking parlor and everything.
Wow.
But we will be ready. I have to keep thinking positive. We will be ready for the end of April when we start lambing, and we have to be milking by then.
Yes, like with any opening, just visualize it, and it somehow you'll barrel toward it, and it'll happen.
Yeah. I just need a little bit of sun.
Yes, I can only imagine. You'll get it. It's coming. You really will.
No, they're doing a good job.
Oh, wow. It's really amazing to imagine what's going to happen from this herd that you are building here, and I can't wait to see the animals myself.
You have to come.
Yeah, I got to come visit them. And you know, that's another thing that I wonder about with sheep sometimes. It's like, I feel like goats get all the glory of, like, everybody loves how cute and playful goats are, and they're always jumping around and doing goat yoga with people. But how would you describe like the personality of sheep?
Oh, sheep are, sheep are wonderful animals. They are a very sociable animal. They don't like to be alone. So that's why when you separate one, they just get nervous. So they really like to be together in group.
Huh.
And if you put them into a routine, they are wonderful. They are really wonderful. And a lot of times people say, oh, sheep are stupid, or sheep are sheepy.
Yeah, they get a bad reputation, but is it unfounded?
It is and it is not.
Yeah.
But they are sheepy because they are social animals. They don't like to be alone.
Right.
But they are far from being dumb or stupid. They have their own personality, mm-hmm. and believe me, but they don't fight you. They know what they want, but they will do everything together. So it's as a management point of view, it's very much easier to manage sheep than goats, for example. Goats are smarter than we are, so it's difficult.
Don't want to deal with that.
No.
I love it. Oh, well, that's a fun insight into the world on life on a farm with sheep.
Sheep being smaller than cows, they are so much easy to handle and to deal with it. So
that makes sense.
Not a good point.
That makes a lot of sense. Wow. Well, we're nearing the end of our episode time, but I have one more question for you. I'm wondering, I don't know, sort of summing it up, like what advice would you give for any of our listeners who are interested in making sheep's milk cheeses in the future, or folks who are thinking of bringing some sheep onto their farm at some point? What advice would you give?
Well, I'm going to start with a farm. I think that the most important thing is be careful what animals you buy. Mm. There is a lot of markets going on, and sometimes you buy or pay for animals that are not worth it. So talk to a lot of people.
Is there a resource that people could go to?
There is an association, the Dairy Sheep Association of North America. Mm-hmm. It's a small association, but just contact them and they can help you with data.
That's great.
And give you some information on what to look into an animal.
Mm-hmm. Great. Listeners will also put that in our show notes, so don't worry about pausing.
And also, sheep are wonderful animals, so go for it. Go for it.
Just
if you need anything,
general encouragement.
I'm willing. It will be a pleasure to help.
Great.
About the cheese size side of the equation, is I would say, don't be afraid of doing cheeses with sheep milk. Mm-hmm. Sheep milk is wonderful. You have a much better yield. You have totally different flavors from cow's milk or even goat's milk. Go for it. But, you know, Elena, I want to say one more thing.
Yeah.
I think that in all of this talk, we always talk about milk and cheese, but there is one product about made with sheep milk that I love, which is yogurt.
Oh, yes.
And
I'm so glad you mentioned it.
It is so good. There is where you can actually have the whole flavor of the sheep, not sheepy, but the sheep, the sweetness of the sheep milk, the natural sweetness, and the consistency of the yogurt is totally different from.
Yes,
from
it has such a rich texture. It's like
creamy,
a dream. I'm totally with you. I bet you're looking for it. Are you gonna make some this spring, maybe, when you finally get your hands
on. For my house, I am.
Yeah. I'm coming over to your house.
That's definitely.
Okay, it's
a
date.
I'm dying to it. It's one of the things that I most miss from home.
Oh, I can imagine. Wow. Well, listeners, take Mariana's advice on whichever camp you fall from the animal side of things, the cheese making side of things, or as a consumer, seek out sheep's milk yogurt. I wholeheartedly agree. Oh, Mariana, thank you so much for giving us more insight into the world of sheep's milk. It has been really great chatting with you.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Elena, again. It was a pleasure to be here.
Stay warm out there in Wisconsin.
We'll try.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this Cheese Making Elements episode. We would love to hear your feedback on the series as we continue with these deep dives. What cheese making elements do you most want to learn about? Do you find there are aspects of cheese making that need more illuminating? We were thrilled to get some feedback after last week's show with Rachel Freer. Special shout out to Urban Stead Cheese for letting us know that Karakin in Cincinnati has an amazing cheese-focused menu. Please keep the conversation going with us on Twitter and Instagram at CuttingTheCurd on both, or shoot us an email at CuttingTheCurd@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back next week with more Cutting the Curd.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. for our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family and become a member. Thanks for listening.
I prayed each night for someone.
Hey listeners, we're nearing the end of our 15th anniversary fundraising campaign, and we need your help to meet our goal. This campaign offers you a chance to win a unique food and music experience in one of the most exciting cities in America. Here's how it works. Donate to HRN and you'll be entered to win dinner for two and two tickets to a concert in one of eight amazing cities: New York, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Nashville, Las Vegas, Charleston, Ardmore, Pennsylvania, and Asheville. All donations support our work educating food system storytellers. And when you donate, you can choose one of those cities and you'll be entered to win dinner and two tickets to a show. So help us reach our goal and enter to win dinner and a show in the city of your choice. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15. Thank you.